Five, four, three, two, one.
Please do not change channel.
From Krypton Radio, brought to you by Famous Faces and Funnies and Off the Chain with Yvonne Mason, it's the Hanging with Web Show Radio Hour, the Internet's premier pop culture talk radio show. You're tuned in, you're logged on, and now your hosts, G.W. Pomager and Christian Basil. Who are you hanging with?
Hello, Krypton Radio. Thanks for logging on and tuning in. You're listening to the Hanging With Web Show Radio Hour. I'm G.W. Pomager.
And I'm Christian Basil. How you guys doing there?
And we're going to hang out tonight with Emmy Award-winning actor, director, writer, producer, musician, dad, just an all-around multi-talented guy. We're hanging out with Tim Russ. Tim, thanks for hanging with us. The other night, Christian and I had a chance to talk to the gang over at Personal Space, and we actually, as it debuted on Amazon, we caught that. So I guess maybe we'll start there, and then we'll work our way into the many projects that you've got going on. So what interested you about doing Personal Space?
I thought it was pretty funny. I thought it was an interesting character to play, you know, which is basically, yeah, the maintenance guy who doesn't really care about, you know, doing the job that he has. And he's just not very jaded and sort of bored with it. And that's,
yeah,
that's it.
You pulled it off great. For all of you all on Krypton Radio, the character is Jeff Lipschitz. I don't know. I got nothing on that.
I don't think I can say it here.
Yeah, it's just a fun fact. But Tim, you have a lot going on, man. You have 10 titles that you're working with that are in development, 5 films in production, 2 television titles in production, including Bloomers, which you're directing, right?
Yeah, I directed, co-directed the first, second, and third season on that show, because we had the first and second season. It was just myself and a guy named Henrik, who directed, every other episode, as it were, about 50-50. And then episode 3, we had about 4 directors on season 3. So that whole season I shared that spotlight with 3 other people. Because of schedules and flexibility and this kind of thing. And the producers wanted to have, you know, a variety of looks and feels and things. So yeah, the third season is still being cut together. It hasn't aired yet.
Wow, man. That's a hugely, you know, busy scheduled, and that's another comedy, right? And so.
Yes, it is. It's a dramedy. It's a dramedy.
I love that word. I do.
Yeah, it's
really
set
do.
Up. Yeah, it is, because the dramedies, you know, the comedy flat out is just, you know, it's typically kind of crazy and wacky, and the subject or the circumstance is not that serious.
Yeah.
And you know, just by definition, that's where you get into comedy. Dramedy is, you can have some very serious discussions, some serious issues and circumstances, you know, and then they're broken up later on by moments of levity. So, as it were, this one is definitely classified as dramedy. There's a lot of drama and melodrama and soap kind of drama in this piece, with the characters involved with each other and the circumstances that they're in. Yeah. So, and there's a lot of them. And it's, you know, I could compare it to something like Friends, you know, but it's got more of an edge, much more of an edge. You know, it's an independent project. It's for the web. There's no restrictions on censorship or anything else. You know, the language is blue. Some of the scenes are blue. I mean, they don't hold back much on that show.
Do you enjoy working? I know you've got a lot of indie projects in the works. Do you enjoy working on those indie projects and with that level of freedom?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, if it's an independent project, even if you're, you know, in front of camera, more often than not, the roles you end up playing are more interesting. It has been for me, in my case. Behind the camera, the advantage of an independent project is that you have independent control over it. You don't have somebody upstairs telling you what you can and cannot do. what they can and don't want, and what they want to change, and what they think this should be or that should be, or, you know, issues with, in many cases, with censorship and things like that. You have the freedom to create and manipulate this this story, whatever it might be, on your own. And you can do that in collaboration with the writer and with the producers and stuff, and you come up with your own thing. And the only people that have to judge it after that are the is the audience. So there's something there's an advantage creatively to have.
But there's something kind of pure in that freedom. There's something you can really deliver a pure story without any outside
without any outside interference. No, you I mean, and you're going to have, you know, you're going to have creative debates, you know, inside the loop with the writer in some cases, or with the producers in some cases. You will bump heads on occasion with that kind of thing, because when there's, if it's, unless it's just your project and you're doing, wearing all the hats, well, then it becomes just your project with all the hats, and there's no, nobody on the outside can say anything. But if it, typically,
this is my,
you lock the door, don't let him in.
good luck with all that, you know. The collaborative effort is, to me, always kind of interesting, because, you know, you can get some really cool improvements and points of views on the story just by somebody thinking about something and bouncing it off of someone else. And that, boy, you know, that that can change a lot of things. So, and the perspectives are all fresh. They're not all coming from the inside out. So,
yeah, it's got to be. There's I think creating anything, and, you know, even when I'm writing a book, it's a collaborative process, whether with the editor or whether with, you know, someone I'm writing with. And that collaboration actually gives you a better story in the end. Although the freedom of not having, you know, an upstairs, you know, 27th floor calling you going, don't do that, has got to be a little refreshing.
Yeah. I've worked on shows before where the producer was, executive producer was banging heads with the network, man. And, you know, to the point where the show was eventually canceled because they just didn't get along with, each other. And it was unfortunate because producer was a really good writer. I mean, the material was so really sharp, really witty, really smart dialogue and stuff. And they just, you know, they were banging heads with the producers on all kinds of things. It might have been budgetary, I'm not sure, because it was expensive. But outside of that, you know, the independent projects, if you have the financing for them and you can do them, then you have the freedom to do a lot of things that you would, and nobody has to tell you one way or the other.
And now, speaking of writing and producing, we saw that coming out next year, 2019, you are writing and producing, is it Myth? Night of the Gorgon?
Yes. Yep. The Myth. Yep. Co-written. It's with myself.
And that's a collaborative process, isn't it?
It's a collaborative project, yes. Two other people I've worked with on that. Jed Oroskilly and Devin Lawrence on the story and some of the script, and also Proxima 7 I'm working on with John Mocht as well, and with a project we're just about to get releases called Miles to Go, which is formerly known as Junkie. That is also a drama that is in final stages of post-production, and we're just about to screen it here in Los Angeles soon. And that was also a story collaborative effort as well. So there's several, there's some that might be listed on, you know, on the list that are no longer being developed or pursued because the producers, you know, don't have the money or they don't have the whatever to get it done. But there's at least three or four that are active, and a couple that are.
Is that all? Three or four?
In terms of being developed, developed.
Yeah.
There's about four, you know, that are actively being pursued and developed, and there's a couple of short films as well, and there's a few that are no longer. Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's no momentum behind them, so they're just sitting there. And you can post anything you want, you know, on IMDb and put whatever stats you want on it. It doesn't, you know, development to me is, you know, either A, the script is being written, or B, you know, you're seeking funds, actively seeking backing or pitching or whatever it might be, and putting it together. But if the script's already done, you know, and the second, third draft, whatever it is, and it's not moving forward anywhere, then it's, you know, it's not really in development as far as I can
it's
see.
It's just kind of laying there.
It's just laying.
Yeah. Where do you find the energy? I mean, since, you know, going back to, like, you know, mid-1990s, you've just gone, like, 1,000 miles an hour. Where do you find the energy, man?
Well, you know, it comes in waves, you know, so it's like being a long-distance runner. You know, you run your 1,500 meters, so you get done, you're exhausted, and then you rest, and then you train and prep for the next run. And essentially, that's what these are, because, you know, until the trigger's actually pulled and you are knee-deep in pre-production and shooting, until that time happens, then all I'm doing is juggling these projects. I'm just juggling things back and forth. The acting career is on autopilot. I don't actively seek out acting roles. I, you know, my agent or manager sends them to me. I go read for them. It's you know, a couple hours out of the day whenever the appointment comes in. Go read for it. If I book it, I do the show, I do the job, and come home. Or, you know, and that's it. And those happen when they happen. The rest of them are the meetings. There are countless meetings, conference calls, script reading, note taking, and that the trip with that is just juggling the number of projects. The difficulty with that is just keeping up with whichever project it is that I'm, you know, dealing with.
That's what I was going to say. You know, you've got so many that are, like you said, even at four or five, that's still a lot of juggling in pre or in production or somewhere like that. How do you not walk on to the set of personal space and say, okay, where's the Gorgon? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Wrong one.
Well, to me, Tim, this is a testament to your work. And this is what I call the Hugh Laurie effect, where, the reason why I'm saying this is Hugh Laurie has been like in a billion other things, but then he lands the role of House, and then somebody comes along and I've seen him in other stuff, but as soon as I watch those other projects like Blackadder and stuff, I finally see Hugh Laurie again. I'm like, wait a minute, is that him? And it was the same thing with you when I saw you on Star Trek Voyager, and then finally somebody had to come up. You know, he's the guy in Spaceballs with combing the desert and saying that famous line. I'm like, what? And then, you know, you finally do the IMDb research, and you're like, holy cow, this guy has really been in – jeez. It's like I've seen you in other spots, and I'm just like – I'm not sitting there going, okay, that's Tim Russ, that's Tim Russ, that's Tim – okay.
Yeah, no, I'll admit that even without thinking of Tim's name right off the bat, I will see – Tim in a movie or in a television show, and I go, look, it's Tuvok. I'm like, oh, damn.
Really?
You know, I do. I honestly do. It's like,
Tuvok.
Look, it's Tuvok. And I just, because that role has been something that is, you know, is part of the Star Trek universe, which makes it, in geekdom, it's, you know, it's like the Grail or the Bible. It's just there. It's you know, scripture, as it were. But then you go back and you see all of these things that you've been in and all the work that you're currently doing. And I mean, right back to, you know, iCarly, and we just saw you, our family and I just saw you in The Good Doctor. It just, we look at all this work and you go, wow, man. And you get known. Now, do you find that people identify you with from your Star Trek days, or are more people open to, you know, knowing what you're doing now? And how's that been for you? I mean, obviously, well, professionally, people, it's not holding you back.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, some people recognize me from the episodics, and other people, and the body of work that I've done. Other people will recognize me specifically from either iCarly or from Star Trek, because, you know, I was on those shows for a number of years, so recurring or otherwise, and so they had the longest, they had the most airtime, so they would recognize me from either one of those, and then a handful of people now and then will say, you know, I've liked your work in general, like the body of work, and the way that you get around all that stuff, whether it's working on Personal Space and then turning around and doing something else on Bloomers, and the next week I'm doing a voiceover for you know, for a video game. The difference is you compartmentalize all that stuff. You compartmentalize everything, and you only spend a certain amount of time specifically on each one of those things. So when you're talking to somebody about a short film, every time you're on the phone and every time you're doing an email, it is specifically about something to do with the project. It's not, you know, how's your day, or I did this and I went to the store, and I'm, you know, we're not talking about all that. We're talking about, you know, the time that I spend is has to be used efficiently. Uh-huh. And I compartmentalize all of the projects. So if today is personal space, today is personal space. If tomorrow's a voiceover, tomorrow's a voiceover. If it's, you know, reading for something, interviewing for something, I got to focus on that. I just set aside some time and I just focus on that. And essentially that's how it works. And there are times when I just have to say to other people, I said, well, they'll approach me and I said, well, I can't because I don't have time. Uh-huh. There are things that I turn down. I just don't do them because I don't have time. So it's managing. It's just managing the hours and the days. That's all it is. It's just managing the time.
Yes,
so not taking on every project is part of it.
Uh-huh.
And taking, when you take the project on, you have to allot a certain amount of time for each one, and to maximize, you know, the quality time on each one of those projects when you're dealing with it, whether you're reading it or whether you're having a conference call or whatever. And that's essentially what it is. So I don't spend, you know, typically a tremendous amount of time during the week goofing off, or I don't spend a tremendous amount of time not, you know, wasting it. You know,
yeah.
It's usually doing something that has to be done, and I just do it.
Yeah, well, no, you have, which is, it's a great balance to, you know, to hear you describe that compartmentalization and how to balance these different projects. So you treat your, whether it's producing, writing, acting, you treat your film career as if it were, you know, a standard job. You get up, you do the job, you go home, and compartmentalize those things. And that's a very healthy way to live. All of you wannabe filmmakers out there on Krypton Radio, pay attention, because Tim's getting it done, and getting it done well. So
you don't want to spend a whole lot of. I mean, ultimately, I don't. I'm not clobbered all the time. You know, there are days when, you know, I can relax and chill out and do relatively nothing. You know, and other times when I'm so slammed that I can't think straight and I'm not getting any sleep, and that does happen. You know, but it. In blocks of time. It's not consistent. It's not daily. It's not weekly. It's whenever it happens, then I get the marathon shoes on, or run the marathon, and then I go sit down and rest for a week. And then that's essentially how it works right now. Compared to working on a series, you know, if you're like the top two or three of the actors on a series, man, you're pumping. You know, that's a lot of work. 15, 16 hour days. You know, you're trying to cram lines in your head because they've been rewritten six times since you looked at the script, and working, you know, every day and doing it. That's exhausting. I mean, that stuff is very, very tiring. So it isn't that it for me right now. It's whenever the gig comes up, I go do it, and I'll work that week. And I'm working on a show this week, sitcom. It'll be through Monday or Tuesday of next week, and then I'll be, you know, done with that. You know, so it's a
awesome. Yeah, we also know, or at least we saw, again, like you said, projects drop off, projects come on. We see you're directing Gift of the Heart. Not to go too far away from our Krypton Radio sci-fi audience, but this is a more of a family drama.
Right.
You got John Schneider acting with you. Is that right?
Yep.
And we just did a show, our inaugural radio hour for the Hanging with the Show. We diversification in film and television, and here we just saw this on your thing that you are doing a drama on breaking cultural barriers. So tell us a little bit about that project.
Well, yeah, you're talking about Gift of the Heart. It's a very poignant story, and several of the writer producer involved in that story has some personal experiences to put into that story, and people he's working with also have some personal experiences in there. It's heavily associated with a couple of charities that have to do with children's cancer and things like that, and he's going to be donating a good portion of the funds that he receives from this film to those charities at the end of the day. It's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story. You know, I don't want to give away the plot, but essentially, you know, it's a girl from one side of the tracks and a young boy from the other side of the tracks. And the friction, you know, between the parents of the girl and the young boy and all that good stuff, and then how their relationship develops in the story. And it's very poignant. These are young kids. These are you know, junior high school kids.
Wow. And those damn tracks, they get in the way every day.
Yes, I know. It's just a sweet, really beautiful sort of arc, in this story of the father of the young boy who's Hispanic and poor and trying to struggle to survive in the country. You know, they're recent immigrants and things like that, and how they try to survive a very great hardship, and very tough. And it just, what happens in the story is just really beautiful. It's a very lovely story and heartfelt. And I'm hoping that, the producer is able to get, that project up and running. I'm hoping that he, to get it going when he plans on getting it going.
Well, it sounds like an amazing project, and you don't typically, you know, shy away from being a part of poignant and important messages. We know we announced at the top of the hour that you're an Emmy Award winning actor. You won an Emmy for public service ads.
Yeah, that's actually for directing and producing. We wrote and produced these. About six, eight of them by now.
Wow.
Which are basically sponsored by the FBI. The FBI put these things out. We put them all together for them. Some of them they wrote, some of them we co-wrote, and some of them, you know, we pitched and they liked them and we did them that way. And we've done them over the last 3 years. I want to say last 3 or 4 years. And I think they're planning to do some more. So we did. We produced several of them in 2016, and we were able to win an Emmy for those.
But in the internet age, you took on intellectual property theft and cyberbullying, which are two probably hot issues today.
Yep, totally.
And that's they're important issues, but you know we forget. I think that in the information age, these things are real to so many. Intellectual property is a real issue in this age because you have access to everybody's everything. I don't even know what I would do if somebody hacked my next book from my computer.
Ransomware. We have an ad on that we just did recently. You know, holding your information hostage, holding your business and its network hostage and everything. You have had no access to it, and now you can't do any business until you pay them a certain amount of money. Also, people transferring funds from your from the CEO's requesting a transfer of funds from the financial officer to some account that's not real. I mean, good Lord, it's never,
man.
It is crazy, man. I mean, Pandora's box has been opened and everything is flying out of it.
Yeah.
That's what we're up against. That's what we're dealing with. I mean, if it isn't in our own, you know, electoral process and the politics of our country right now and the governing of it, then it's everywhere else.
Well, that actually segues into the next set of ads that you did, which is cyberbullying.
Yes.
See what I did there? It's a thing. It's a thing. And it's a thing everywhere from all levels. And it reaches right down into our schools, right down to our kids.
Right down to the kids. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so adamantly against that kind of thing. And it's forever. It was taken lightly. It was taken as, you know, you just got to tough it up, or everybody's going to get bullied now and then. And people just didn't care. It was not an issue. It was not something the school, you know, could focus on. And you know, and now people are being, you know, killed, you know, because somebody has been bullied their whole time, and then they come back with a, you know, AK and mow the place down. I mean, at the end of the day, that's bad news. The bullying stuff, and it is uncalled for.
And how we treat each other has consequences. I mean, you just hit on it. How we treat each other has consequences. Maybe not today. Maybe, you know, it's not the 1970s with an after-school special telling us, you know, to stand up and don't take bullying. It's very real, and it reaches in, and, you know, sooner or later, people do respond. They do react, whether it be with suicide, God forbid, or with violence, God forbid.
Yeah.
But
and it's not only that, but the psyche of what it's got to do to an individual. I mean, bullying alone in school when I was growing up, there were, you know, computers were just coming online, pardon the pun, and you know that bullying, you know, really, you know, people like you said, they, you know, you had to toughen up, and some people believe that it strengthened the character. You punch the bully back, but in cyberbullying, it's in the ether forever. It's out there, and it takes its toll, and in some places people take their lives, which is not cool at all.
Oh yeah, in the new millennium, it's you know, the old adage we all grew up with, you know, sticks and stones, but words do hurt. They hurt a lot, and in the integration age, it's not just words between you and the bully. It's words between you and the bully and 2 billion of your closest strangers.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it is entirely different now. No one could have imagined or seen it coming, you know, and here we are, you know, and now you have to adjust the laws, you have to adjust the policies, you have to adjust, you know, the regulations and things as to how you manage to control, the repercussions of the things later, whether it's threats or whether it's bullying or whatever it might be. Now everything has to be adjusted to the tech. Everything has to be adjusted to the way in which we communicate. And, suggest to your audience, the show that the series that actually deals with all that stuff is Black Mirror, which is on Netflix.
Excellent, excellent
that
show.
Series, dead on dealing with that genie out of the bottle, man.
Yeah. Oh, it is. And I mean, you know, forever, I've always said, you know, science fiction, fantasy, the stuff that we talk about here on Krypton Radio, has always been right on the edge, because we're able to talk about things that, in a non-threatening way, that if we dealt with directly would be threatening. In today's world, more and more of those science fiction scenarios are not so veiled anymore, because they're real.
They are real.
They're very real.
Specifically, one of the stories they dealt with, liking someone, quote unquote, or you know, having a certain number of people following you, or you know, people liking you, and a certain rating from that liking, which could affect your job, your employment. And sure enough, in my business as we speak, producers are looking at your Instagram numbers. They're looking at your IMDb rating. They're looking at your, you know, how many followers you have.
They are looking
before hiring you. Never mind whether you can walk and chew gum or not.
No, we just read an article not long ago. Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones did an interview in the article where she says outright, "I didn't do as good a job as the other person reading for the part, but I had a larger social media audience."
That's scary, man.
And she said, "I didn't do a good job on my reading. I did a good job." Obviously, she's an amazing actress, Sophie. We love you. But she says outright in her art interview that she didn't do as good a job, she didn't think, as the other girl reading with her, and yet she got the job because she already had this pull, this just draw from social media, this number of friends.
Which is sad, you know, which is sad because the people who own these properties, the people who, you know, are producing these properties cannot stand on the property. They cannot stand on what they've created. They have to look at these other sources instead of putting your stuff out there and letting an audience like it or not like it and doing the best job you can of writing and producing and casting it. Doing those things, which is what we grew up doing, you know, you have to rely on things that are already built in from some other area that has nothing to do with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that actress now, you know, if the other actress had gotten the role who played it better, you don't think she would have a following by now? Of course she would. She would have
absolutely.
A following. along with the show.
This is, in social media era, it really is kind of chicken or egg. And you're absolutely right. The egg would have come if you'd have got the chicken.
Well, it's not only that, but the numbers are going to the wrong individuals. So I could probably elaborate, but we can talk about, you know, like the Kardashians, and I'm not talking about one star from Star Trek, which should have a higher rating than the other set of Kardashians. but I can't even think of her name, but the girl who was made popular from Dr. Phil. I mean, we're not only sending those numbers to the wrong people, but we're putting an influence on society that this is supposed to be now the new role model. It's not based upon character. It's not based upon the person. It's based upon how many people are clickbaiting their YouTube channel, and it's not good.
No, it's
really
not good.
Redefining what we are, and it's really a scary line that we.
It is. This was not a first career choice for me. I, you know, dove into web radio and web television through my writing. But I say all the time, I can interview a New York Times bestselling author to 75 views, and God bless her, the woman puts a Chewbacca mask on and lasts for 15 minutes and 3 million views. So I have no idea how, what magic.
I think way more than the 15 minutes that's worth deserving at all.
Wow. Yeah, that's.
A little more.
Yeah, that's what it is. It becomes, you know, it becomes the dominant, the force becomes pop culture. The dominant force becomes how many YouTube views you have. The dominant force, no matter what, if you're just sitting there and picking your nose for 3 hours and you get 3 million views or 10 million views, all of a sudden everybody wants you.
Don't say that.
You haven't done anything, you pick your nose. I mean, at the end of the day.
Christian, job opportunity.
That's what kills me is that, you know, you're not, everything is just down to whether or not your numbers reach critical mass, and doesn't matter what it is. You know, oh, let's give them a TV show. Oh, let's give them a blah, blah, blah. You know what? Just because that many people know who you are, dude, 20 minutes later, they're going to have forgotten you. So why would you bother? You know, it's better to have something that you can produce, that you can write and create, that has some staying power, that has something that will last at some point in time, something that has quality or talent. And, you know, my perspective is, you know, even another 20 or 30 years past what your perspective is. I mean, you can imagine, I grew up with, you know, 1950s and 60s television and films, you know, and now I'm looking at the, you know, some of the stuff that's out now, or the remakes or whatever the hell it is, as opposed to you guys who are younger than I am by a number of years, and you're already feeling it. Now you can amplify that, or, you know, or multiply it times two or three or four. You know, by the time you're my age, what's that going to be like then? You think you're doing now? Wait till that time comes around.
All right. And on that depressing note, we have to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the opportunities that these trying times present to us as artists. So we're going to hear right now from our partners and friends. Stay tuned. Come on back for more. We're hanging with Tim Russ, and we're talking art, internet, community. We're talking personal space. We're talking about one of the busiest actors and producers and writers and musicians in Hollywood. So stay tuned in, stay logged on, and we'll be right back.
Famous Faces and Funnies in Melbourne, Florida is leading the way in pop culture fun. From comic books and graphic novels to Funko Pops and collector's items, Famous Faces and Funnies has it all. Rick Shea and the professional team at Famous Faces and Funnies are friendly and knowledgeable. Whether you're looking for toys, props, collector treasures, or a new comic book, Famous Faces and Funnies is your one-stop shop. To find Famous Faces and Funnies on Facebook and Twitter, just type at FFF Comics.
The Hanging With Web Show Radio Hour on Krypton Radio, bringing you the very best in pop culture talk radio. Each Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, The Hanging With Web Show Radio Hour with your hosts, G.W. Bominger and Christian Basil, who are hanging with rising pop culture newcomers as well as superstar icons. The Hanging With Web Show Radio Hour. Tune in Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Who are you hanging with?
And we're back. We are here. I'm G.W. Pometcher with Christian Basil, and we're hanging with Tim Russ, best known as the Vulcan officer Tuvok in Star Trek Voyager, but with so many more projects. Tim is such a bright and insightful artist. We're so lucky to have him here on the show tonight, and we are talking about the information age and the opportunities and the pitfalls that it presents. Now, Tim, we talked a little bit about your work in independent projects and the opportunities. By the same token, as there are all these dangers and things to watch out for in the digital age, there are new opportunities for digital distribution and artists to get to a new audience using the same technology that has all these pitfalls. You've come from, as you said, growing up watching those old classics that have stood the test of time, being involved in movements and productions that have been in, you know, ingrained in pop culture now, and now into the digital movement and with these indie projects. What's that transition been like for you? And are there some good things to go along with all these scary things?
Yeah, well, it's a double-edged sword, a very sharp double-edged sword. And you can imagine the landscape of film and television used to be a pyramid shape. It was a very, very narrow base pyramid. And now the pyramid is much wider at the base than it was before, with a very tiny top. You have so much of the viewing audience is fragmented because of the myriad of outlets and the internet. Web streaming, et cetera, YouTube, whatever it might be. Everything is fragmented now to the point where, you know, everybody's fighting for just the smallest piece of the pie. And it's also created a glut of material. For every one person who might be talented enough to put together a project from start to finish, there are a million who cannot. You know, yet they're involved in it.
They're going to try.
they're going to try, and it muddles everything up. They don't have the background. They don't have the wherewithal. They don't have the experience. They may not have the talent. All they have is, you know, a camera and a laptop, you know, and that's it. You know, that is the YouTube, essentially what that is. But that also transcends into, you know, trying to produce major film projects. Because I can tell you how many god-awful scripts I've read that people have sent me, and I would tell them that it's not shootable. You know, you need a writer, you know, and then you need a line producer. You need somebody who knows what they're doing. And they don't have a clue. They just think because they have a laptop and a writing program, you know, and maybe some money from their grandmom or something to try to make something, that they're going to try to make this and get it out there. It is a nightmare because the outlets, the number of places you can put them have shrunk. And the number of pieces that are being made has exponentially gone up. So it's harder to get above the din of all of that racket in the way. It's harder to get your piece out front. It's harder to get attention for your piece because there is so much of it. When before, there wasn't. You know, it cost money and it took expertise to make movies, even low-budget movies in the days past. But, you know, that's with film and things like you had to know what you were doing. You had to have people on board who knew what they were doing.
Yeah, it was a very unique and very, as you said, the pyramid base was much narrower. It was a very specific skill set. You couldn't do it with you know, literally the average laptop, as you pointed out, comes with either a basic Windows Movie Maker or a basic, you know, Mac iMovie. So, you know, a lot of the young people are coming up. They're not even learning the modern digital filmmaking using things like Final Draft or Premiere Pro. They're going right to, like, you know, Windows Movie Maker and cutting together something, you know, really, really fast. And so it is. Where's the balance point? I mean, all things have a cycle and we eventually learn, to deal with these new things that come at us. So what do you think, what's the secret to narrowing that focus and narrowing that field down and reaching that audience today? Other than the, you know, the obvious, the, you know, like the networks, like, you know, let's, you know, let's just find a person with social media reach. And other than doing that, what's the secret, really, do you think, to reaching that audience and making your stuff stand out today?
Well, the problem is, again, and I don't – so to me, it's a darker horizon that I see. What I don't see is a plateau. That's what I don't see. I don't see a plateau. You know, before – you know, radio was a plateau. Television was a plateau. Motion pictures were a plateau, right?
Uh-huh.
A phone was a plateau. There was no other phones with cords on them were for decades. You know, television forever. Radio for a very long time. And those technological media outlets stayed the same. Now you have something that's rising and rising and changing and rising, and it's not leveling off.
There is no. I mean, just about the time that YouTube, you know, starts producing something good, somebody will open up another one. Or there's, Vimeo, and there's Amazon, everything.
YouTube is a platform, but it's all streaming.
Yep.
And everybody else is going to streaming. So now, you know, this next whatever it is level we're at is going to be involved in the Netflix model. That's what everybody's going to, is the Netflix model.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody else will come up something 20 minutes after that. I mean, come on, man. CDs took over records, and now the CDs are gone. I mean, I only took 20 minutes.
I haven't had a DVD in like 3 years. True story. that's actually real.
There? Oh, but they had to come in and replace the VHS. Oh, we got to have these. We got to have that. And then that's gone. And 10 minutes later, that's gone. And so we look at, well, what's next? You know, and what kind of image is going to be next? Is it three-dimensional? Is it something else? 3D going to take over 2D? At the end of the day, there's not going to be any – there's no plateau to the tech. The tech continues to increase. And every technological breakthrough is going to translate to the media in some way, shape, or form. Guarantee it is going to come into the media. The media is going to be using that. And I'll give you another example.
Oh, my God, we're going to be watching a holodeck really soon.
Yes,
I think
will.
We're there.
And what's on the holodeck beside yourself? Oh, that's right. Perfect recreations of human beings, which takes the actor basically out of the loop. That's what's next.
I saw a sci-fi horror thing a couple years ago that was just that. They had copied an actress.
Oh, well, hello. Hello. Let's see, a Blade Runner, Star Wars. Come on, man.
Yeah. Well, Carrie Fisher. They digitally recreated Carrie.
That was the big Rogue One.
Yeah.
Yeah. You saw Sean Young in Blade Runner. You saw that close up of her, man.
Yeah.
That was flawless. That was perfect. Kurt Russell in Guardians. Come on, man. Those are close ups.
Yeah.
With real actors in the scene, and you cannot tell a blink difference. Now take that. The next step beyond that is a computer program generating an actor from scratch and the voice of that actor from scratch.
Mm.
Now you don't even need the actor's voice or their likeness. You make up your own. The only trick that will be the red carpet at the Oscars.
That'll be
not going to care. They're not going to care about any of that.
Yeah.
They're not going to care. You know, audiences are flooding an entire stadium in Japan right now to hear a concert by a giant neon freaking three-dimensional image of a singer that doesn't exist. So that's happening now, man. They are packing an arena to watch a concert, music show, by a singer that doesn't exist.
Well, it is. It literally, when you said all of that out loud, and I didn't know about the Japan thing. I really, truly didn't.
Yes, so you ought to check it out. As soon as I get off, you can check it off.
Because we don't need the actor, and then they're going to replace the talk show host that interviews the actor with a digital voice. In fact, the radio just told me they have a digital DJ. So, you see, we're all on our way out.
DJ, everything is going to be replaced because you know, the corporations that own all of your studios, you know, whether it's Disney or whether it's Time Warner or somebody else or Coca-Cola, you know, they're looking at the bottom line at the end of the quarter. They don't give rat's ass about what the movie is, the quality of this or that. If they don't have to pay an actor exorbitant amounts of money plus residuals, you know, then the only person they're paying is the programmer, and they can get a programmer dime a dozen, And the technology is so powerful because it's going up exponentially every year. So the ability for the computer to program the stuff and to make it is only going to get faster and easier. They're not going to hire a real actor. Why in the world would they do it? But nobody's going to say, oh yeah, my daughter doesn't care. And my daughter's daughter's not going to care because all they're going to see is the digital recreation. Like I said, the only trick will be the red carpet. And in this case, it may not be a trick. They just may not have it.
Valid.
It's that simple, you know. They'll have the programmer standing there. I mean, I don't know. At the end of the day, they will replace the actor. They will be replaced, and they probably in my lifetime, I will probably see it.
That's a sad commentary. Tim. There's so much there's such life right now in the arts community that the idea that there's a direction where that life just dies out is a very frightening prospect. Christian, what'd you have?
No, I was going to say, Tim, don't tell Garrett, but I'm actually an AI been replaced by Christian.
They're secretly fine. If you look at the Marvel action movies, 50% of those movies are CGI.
Yeah.
Including the
actors. Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The actor shows up, he puts on the suit, and then as soon as the suit is on, he disappears, and there's a CGI guy in a suit.
CGI of the actor. Not even a stuntman. It's a CGI.
Yeah.
Here's my guilty pleasure on this one. It's funny, and I can't believe I'm using this as an example, but I don't know if you gentlemen remember Pluto Nash.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where there's a concert, and it basically is one guy doing the whole orchestra from a keyboard. That's it. It's just this one guy. So I'm like, I think we're getting close to that revelation eventually.
Which brings us to our next segment for Tim, which is, in addition to being an actor, director, writer, and producer, you're also a musician.
Yes.
We saw three albums on CD Baby.
Wow. 30 years. Yeah.
I've got to ask this because it's actually somebody had mentioned it to me, Tim, that you played music. And the first video that I heard, I went on YouTube and pulled it up, and I heard, I think I'm going to say this wrong, I'm so sorry, Kushengeza,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Kushengeza is Swahili for amazing.
It is Swahili. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The That's African, amazing.
it's actually in the song. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
That's cool. We were listening before the show. We were listening. Wow, man. You're not just, like a musician, like an actor who does some music on the side. Like, you're a musician. That's really good stuff.
Thank you very much. I've been playing for 40 years. I mean, I was playing long before I was acting, and I still play today. You know, I've done everything from early on rock, hard rock, to R&B bands with horns, to folk rock, Cat Stevens, James Taylor, all those guys, and then into pop, top 40 for a while, and now doing, pop rock and blues sort of stuff, roots music, old school. That's what I'm doing in town, currently on a pretty regular basis. And I'd like to keep doing that because I enjoy playing. So, still singing, still playing music. And
we heard
again,
some of the blues. We were listening to the blues stuff. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic, man. Now I understand that you have very little, as you said earlier, you compartmentalize things really well. So the team here always goes out and tries to find those tidbits on you, and you are, your public life is and your private life are very separated. Congratulations, you did an awesome job at that. However, we did find one thing, and that was, for the Krypton Radio audience out there, you would love to jam with one of two musicians. You want to tell everybody about that?
There's a couple. I mean, I'm not sure, which ones I mentioned at the time, or pop players, some big major artists, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to get in a jam with Carlos Santana, is one of my favorites. I mean, he's still playing.
Yeah,
I'd love to have him, and there's a couple others depending upon the circumstance. I like Hornsby. I like a few other people.
One that you mentioned that to draw my eye immediately because I'm a child of the '80s is Peter Gabriel.
Yes, my God! I mean, when you say jam, I'm thinking of just like instrumentalist.
Yeah.
But Peter's a songwriter.
Yeah,
composed one of my absolute favorites. Yeah, it would be. And here's the thing. I mean, I don't know what, I don't know how that jam would go, because I never, I don't imagine Peter Gabriel, you know, necessarily jamming. I think whenever that guy sits down, he's writing and creating something.
Yeah, but when he opens his mouth, it's already been written.
Oh, dude, yeah, it's already,
and
the concept's already there.
Yeah,
he's just fleshing it out. Whereas if it's a an instrumentalist like Santana, Carlos Santana, a few others that are out there who are players, that's something I would enjoy. There's a few drummers. There's a couple of bassists I'd like to jam with as well. If I had an opportunity to do so, like, I would love to jam with his bass player, Tony Levin. I think it's fantastic. And there's a few others. So players, there's also a couple of drummers I wouldn't mind jamming with. If I had a chance to do so, that's the kind of thing I would enjoy playing. I would love to sit down, and actually meet him and talk to him for a minute and get to know him. But, that's just because I've admired his work so much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it'd just be nice to look over and have him say, "Hey, mate, you're pretty good." And that'd be done. You'd be done. You'd have a nice day.
What was the other name that I might have mentioned? What was it?
Well, you had Carlos and you had Peter Gabriel. And I think she said there were a couple more. Those two stood out to me, immediately.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm trying to picture Peter writing and singing a song that while Carlos jams in the background.
Wow.
We just all get wowed by that.
if anybody could make it happen, it would be Peter Gabriel.
Everybody has a song that gets stuck in their ear. Do you have, as a musician and a music lover, do you have a favorite current song that's out there right now? I know you're into some pop stuff, so anything out there that's caught your attention?
I've listened to a few things, a few pieces here and there. I do like a couple of things from Imagine Dragons. I dig, I like one or two of Sia's tracks. There's some of the other ones are just, I want to say, individual tunes. There's one by Kanan, which is just spectacular, that I think is wonderful. It's called In the Beginning. And, the band is called Kanan. And, that's insane. I love that track. And that's, that's one of them that gets in my head sometimes. I can't get it out, so there's a few here and there that I do like. And you know what it is? You know what it is now? It's like I was at something doing. I was working on with somebody the other day, and I was at their house working on something ready, and they had music playing in the background, and it was either Pandora or Spotify, something. It was some random tracks playing, and I heard a couple of songs that I had to take the bloody phone over and Shazam the damn things to get them. And once I have them, I'll go ahead and download them and put them on my phone.
Yeah.
Now, I may never get another song from that band, and I haven't heard it before, but I'm going to get that one because I like it. And that's essentially how I do things now.
Again, the digital revolution, since iTunes, the single is king. Because you just, grab your one song and go. And,
that's it.
It's an amazing, there are amazing opportunities for artists of all kinds, musicians and actors and filmmakers right now. I dread the day when the computer has just taken over completely, but I certainly see where you were coming from, because that just scared the hell out of me. I'm out of a job soon. Because I talk to people for a living. Really? So if there's no people to talk to, that's it. I'm done.
That is exactly what – I mean, again, I don't know how much longer some of our professions are going to be around. I mean, it's just – people. You have to put it in perspective of somebody being born right now.
Yeah.
Right. So being born now, somebody may be only 7 or 8 or 10 years old and they're looking to the future to do XXX. Well, XXX may not be there by the time you get
well,
it's gone. Over.
And the big question, and I mean, really, that we hit on all hour, really, the big question for all of you radio listeners out there on Krypton Radio, is art I mean, because so many things are. Is art quantifiable? Can it be programmed? And will it be art? And will it be art when it comes out the other end? Because creativity we take for granted as a human quality, but can it be programmed? I mean,
It can. The only way that you can do that is if you have a computer that can run at the same speed that the human brain can calculate. And at that point, the computer would be sentient. And at that point, it would be conscious and able to create. Until that point in time, I think you're only going to have human beings that can create, and they will use the tools of tech to those creations. I mean, I think that'll be the case until you have a computer that can compute at the same speed that the human brain can. You know, that's the thing. The human brain can dial every phone number in the New York City phone book in a millisecond. That's how many calculations it makes in a millisecond. That's how fast it is.
Wow. Personally, you know that just blows me away.
But that's the speed at which the neurons can communicate with each other. And there's somebody right now, a scientist, who's working on imitating.
Quantum processing, it's called. We just read an article not long ago, and it's supposed to be literally take advantage of that physics effect, quantum tunneling effect, where it's instantaneous, which is scary fast.
And it is not only instantaneous, but the human brain has other tricks. The way in which the neurons communicate with each other is also a trick that the computers cannot do. That also accounts for a certain percentage of the speed of which the way in which we calculate. The reason we can do three things at once is because of the way the neurons are actually working, the way the neurons are connecting and communicating with each other.
And now, as storytellers, too, it begs the question, because as storytellers, so much of the stories that entertain and delight and educate us come from the mistakes we make, because we're people, and we do. We make errors in all of those computations all the time. Just like you said earlier, part of the creative process is, can you get a computer to understand the mistakes that make drama drama and comedy comedy?
Right. Yeah. Or can you, the computer doesn't have life experience. How does a computer have an experience? It doesn't have a life experience to draw from. It doesn't have a true story. It can't imagine what it might be like if blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Because you're taking a life experience that we know and we understand, our perception of time and the way we measure time. Now we take a story that deals with time and we twist it on its head. How in the hell is a computer going to do that?
Exactly. Well, knowledge without wisdom and experience can't be creative.
It can play a symphony, but it can't compose a symphony.
Exactly.
Right. And it can copy. It can copy. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's actually somebody in Sweden who made a computer that was designed to make a pop song. It was designed to create a pop tune, a hit song. These guys took algorithms. They took all of these samples of hit songs for like 20 years, 20, 25 years. They put them in the computer. And the computer would take elements from each one of those songs that were consistent with those songs, and they would combine them. And that includes a melody, progression, arrangement, and the drum beat, the groove. And they designed it to create pop tunes based on that algorithm. Now, I have no idea what ever happened with that, and I didn't hear a single thing that it put out.
They're not cranking out art. They're cranking out dollar bills.
Cranking out what it is.
We've been chatting for an hour, guys. We've been chatting for an hour. That's what it's all about. We're hanging with Tim Russ. Real quick, we do have to wrap it up, so we want to remind everybody you can catch Tim right now several projects. you can catch Tim right now in Personal Space, though, created by Tom Pike, and we had Dana Shaw on the show the other night. You can catch Tim right now there. But there's so many projects coming up, so guys, go on out and check Tim Russ's webpage, timrusswebpage.com. Much easier than that, guys.
Don't get easier than that.
TimRussWebpage.com. You can see all about what Tim is up to. Check him out on IMDb. and look at those other projects that are coming out, or go to Amazon right now and catch his episodes of Personal Space. This is the Hanging With Web Show Radio Hour. I'm G.W. Pomacher.
And I'm Christian Basil.
We've been hanging with Tim Russ. You guys know him from Star Trek Voyager. If you look him up, you'll find out you probably know him from a lot more. Remember, folks, log on, tune in, and see who we're hanging with. We'll be right back.